Okay, time for some dry bulk. Thought I'd start by sort of introducing the topic. I think we all know what dry bulk is, but if we do reflect a bit on the past years, it's been volatile to say the least. We had a challenging market during COVID, and then we had a very, very big bounce in 2021, start of 22 on the back of, you know, improving demand and also some congestion on a global scale. Then we also saw for 2022 a period where Capesize earnings were, you know, below even Handysize, and then this year has been quite good for Capesize and Supramax, and then Panamaxes on average have been underperforming. But I guess in 24 has been a decent market so far, and what we've seen is that the values of the dry bulk vessels have come up significantly this year. You know, by using the value of a five-year Capesize, we see that we're, you know, on a quite a high level. And on Panamaxes, you know, we had a peak over the summer, which has come down a bit on weaker rate developments, but overall quite strongly these asset prices. And then we look at how the equity markets at least are looking at the dry bulk sector, looking at how the price to NAV is for the broader companies on average. We saw that price to NAV was close to one before the summer, but then after the summer holidays, the sentiment has been quite poor, and now you see that the dry bulk equities are trading at a sharp discount to NAVs. And you know that all else equal means that the equity markets have a negative view on the dry bulk sector over the coming months. So I guess then it's interesting to hear from our panelists. I'll quickly introduce them. We have Stavros Gyftakis from Synergy, which is a Capesize company mainly. We have Mark Filanowski from Pangaea, Panamax, Ultramax, Supramax, and now also Handys after a transformative transaction. But you know, also Pangaea is a, you know, brand themselves as a full service maritime logistics company with also port operations and such activities. Then we have Mr. John Su from Erasmus Ship Invest, mainly invested in the smaller dry bulk categories, or the mid-size Kamsarmax, Panza, Panamax, Supramax, and Handys. They also have investments in container feeder ship and LPG. And then last but not least, we have Costas de la Portas, mid-size dry bulk carriers mainly, and also a significant new build program. So perhaps the most bullish on the panel, I don't know, let's see. I guess we can start with the panelists and a show of hands. You know, within your respective segment, do you think 2025 will be a better year? If so, please raise your hand, and better year than 24. Okay, and that is a very good outlook then.
Always optimistic, ship owners, right?
To buy or to sell.
Okay, well, perhaps we can start with you, Costas,
Okay.
for the reasoning why you expect 25 to be a better year than this one.
Okay. First of all, thank you very much for the invitation today here in Capital Link in Tokyo. Tokyo is my favorite city. My company is quite busy here in Japan, and I hope the audience will enjoy our conversation today and to have a better understanding of the dry bulk market. First of all, I'm very cautiously optimistic about the dry bulk market since for the coming years coming. Since the two major countries which affect the dry bulk market is China and India. These two countries, they have a very strong growth of GDP of 4.8 and 7%. Let's go now to demand side in China. As everybody have heard that for the last 2 weeks, the Chinese government has announced of a new massive stimulus package coming to China of $1 trillion, which this money will come in a few months' time. Now, by such huge stimulus package, we will see boost on infrastructure facility in Chinese market, which this means more iron ore going to China. In addition to, the Chinese government has reduced the interest rate of the borrowing in order to help to boost the people to start spending more money and buying houses and buying to buy more houses and to assist the housing market in China. In addition to, for the last 2 years, we have seen massive exports from Chinese port of steel cargo. For the last 2023, we see 100 million tons of steel moving out of China. This has improved the backhaul cargos, the freights, and the TC rates. As everybody knows, the Chinese steel is the most competitive price, so everybody wants to buy more steel from China. Let's go now back to India. As I have mentioned, it's growing with 7 GDP growth, and the population have reached 1.4 billion living in India. These people are consuming a lot of raw materials, bulk commodities, and we have seen that last year they have reached coal going to India, 240 million metric tons of cargo. During this the hot weather, summer season, and monsoon type, we see that the increasing 3% and 4% the increase of coal, so a lot of coal we see for the next year going to India. Now let's go on the supply demand. As everybody knows here, supply is very tight on dry bulk. The order book remains on the historical low levels for the next years, and which accounts only to 7 to 8%. And that is the reason why all the shipyards, they don't have priority to build any more dry bulk ships. So we see less dry ships coming in the market. As I give you an example, in Korea for the last 3 years, there are no dry bulk vessels building in Korea yards. In China, we see less and less yards willing to give slot for dry bulk vessels because they prefer to build much more expensive vessels, such as mega containers and tankers. And in Japan, which we are very busy, we see the Japanese shipyards reducing the production as there is a lack of workers and lack of engines in order to compete. So many yards have reduced the dry bulk vessels. One other reason which I see I'm very confident about the dry market is that there's instability between the new building prices and the TC rates. And I give you one other example. In order to build here in Japan an Ultramax vessel is costing around 39 million. But the TC rate for 5 years is 14 to 15,000 per day for 5 years. So the owners are a bit skeptical to put more orders since the time charter rate with the CP prices, with the new building prices, there's a big, huge, and they covers only the operating expenses. Also, instability in the market, wars, let's say closing the Suez Canal, people refuse to pass from the Suez Canal. It gives also increase the toll miles, which is very beneficial for dry bulk market. Now, for the asset values, it will remain strong in the dry bulk for second-hand ships, since it's been driven by new building prices, which are sky high. And what I have seen here, and everybody knows, that people outside of dry, they like containers or mega or containers, tanker side, always they want to buy and invest in dry bulk shipping because they see opportunity there. So that's why there's huge demand buying dry bulk vessels now, and they keep the prices high.
Well, thank you, Kostas. That was a thorough sort of review of perhaps what we can expect on dry bulk. So that's very good. John, you're also optimistic for the future. You're not only involved in dry bulk, but also other shipping segments. To sort of is that helping you becoming more confident in 2025 than 2024? Sort of what are the main factors you are looking at these days?
Yeah, thank you, Nils. Konnichiwa to everyone. And my name is John Su from Erasmus Ship Investor Group. So we have Japan as our most important marketplace, with two offices only in Japan, in Tokyo and Imabari respectively. So we have Japan, we have still more than 10 new building on order at the moment. Although we have zero bulkers at the moment on order, and now we have a zero order in China neither since ever. And back to the topic, why I'm feeling also very much better feeling for next year, 2025. I would say that, of course, we in the last 3 years' time, we have been dramatically reduced our dry bulk fleet on the asset side. So we have sold actually more than 10 old, relatively old bulkers when they come off long-term employment with our commodity trading charters, actually. So on the other hand, next year, we would expect probably more opportunities to come up. So as Nils, you mentioned that earlier, that in the history, the historic data shows that at a certain time moment that honey size even bit down Cape size. And I think probably in the next few months' time, we may see that again. I'm sorry, Stavros, for that, for the Cape side. But of course, I think Costa will be happy to hear that. And probably it will happen again because the volatility definitely is there. Although today's market on the dry bulk, I would say that it's not traditionally like two-tiers market in the past as people talk about, because again, two-tiers market, probably from technology viewpoint, it is true because it's eco design, dual fuel, whatever the new technology things. But on the other hand, we see also a very, very different part of the market also due to geopolitical reasons. So we see that, of course, there's so-called dark fleet or shadow fleet or different segregation of the trees. I think in today's situation, post-pandemic, and we are under a global kind of wartime market, I think probably in the next few months or years, we may see further segregation of these business trading patterns as well. So probably this may also add a kind of tonnage tide situation in some region of the world. And of course, globalization is facing a big challenge at the moment. So that's why I think overall, next year, we will say probably a more interesting time. So back to the small topic that, of course, we are also investing as just a heavy asset owner position that, of course, not only dry, also moving on to relatively smaller sized ships like feeder container vessels and then small pressurized LPG coaster vessels. So this is also kind of, as Costas mentioned, it's completely old school old school methodology to say that it's just investment and earnings, whether it match or not. We feel that at the moment, still feeder container size vessel and also small LPG gas carriers, it make better sense from earnings to the investment side. And also we can see that relatively smaller percentage of order book on this domain. So that's why we feel relatively more confidence at the moment. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John. It's obviously something to keep a lookout in changing trading patterns, and the geopolitics has had a big impact this year and probably will for the next years as well. Over to Mark. You recently acquired 15 handy sizes in a big transaction for Pangaea. So I guess you have to be bullish if you're buying ships, right?
You would think I must be bullish, right? So, but I am. When I look at the market for next year, I think short term, our markets are always susceptible to spikes and dips for any number of factors. But over the long term, the historical cycle is driven by supply, and supply is being restricted by lower new building. At the same time, I look at the current market, and you would think if supply was restricted, the market would be more lively. And it isn't. I think one of the big reasons is because no ships are being scrapped in almost every segment. No ships are being scrapped. Ships in the dry bulk segment are getting older. There is more scrapping predicted for next year. And maybe with all of the concentration on fuels and emissions, and it might just take a little bump in the fuel price, the cost of moving your ships, and the cost of repairing your ships and going through dry dock to force some more of that scrapping to occur, to put a little bit more pressure on dry bulk rates and make us all a little happier.
And then Stavros, Cape slower than handy, is that not that's not a good outlook? So I guess you probably don't agree with that.
Well, I definitely not agree. I mean, looking at the recent history, looking at 2024, the Capes have been the standout performers of the sector. I have to return the apologies to John. We have reclaimed our A status in the sector. Sorry for that, guys. and to Kostas to a certain extent, and to Mark. I mean, looking at the three key pillars that define the outlook in our sector, you have demand, you have supply, you have macroeconomics. All three are looking great for Capes, and we are very, very optimistic about at least the next 3 to 5 years. On the demand side, you have not only increasing volumes when it comes to iron ore, when it comes to bauxite, and when it comes to coal, but you have also the increasing ton-mile demand. You have all the major miners having growth plans, increasing efficiencies. You have iron ore out of Brazil with increased volumes. You have bauxite out of West Africa. So the Atlantic Basin is expected to be very strong. Exports out of there are expected to be very strong. You have coal in the search of energy security after the war in Ukraine. Coal is emerging. You have China ramping up 41 gigawatt in new coal-fired power plants. So demand is looking great. On the supply side, you have the best fundamentals within the dry bulk sector. You have less than 2%, 1.5%, assuming zero scrapping. If you assume average 10-year average scrapping, you have close to 0.5%. If you assume a high case of scrapping, the higher percentage of the 10-year average, you have even negative fleet growth in the next 3 years. And also on the geopolitical side, things are balanced. On the one hand, you may have some risks from the upcoming US elections, potentially tariffs being imposed against China. On the other hand, you have fiscal stimulus on China. You have easing monetary policy globally. So it is all looking very, very, very positive.
So, you know, it seems like the panel is agreeing that demand is going to be fairly good and that the order book is low. So it sounds like a market where you would want to, you know, up your stakes, right? So, you know, perhaps we can start with you, Mark. The reasoning for the recent transaction you did in the Handysize fleet, and perhaps a bit, you know, you being a more fully integrated logistics provider, how does that change your thinking when growing in this market?
Well, we've always had a need to grow, a desire to grow as a public company. We need to show growth. We don't want to look back and think that we haven't tried to grow the company and grow our shareholder base and put our best foot forward. So this particular deal that came through to us is particularly attractive because we base the price on our net asset value compared to the net asset value of the ships we're buying. So even though it's a inflated market, it was on an even exchange for us, and that was a good deal for us. But beyond that, you know, our business really isn't shipping; it's cargo. And when we look at our customers, move cargo on Ultramax, on Panamax, on Supramax. They also move it on handy-sized ships. We've always We've always worked in the handy-sized segment before, but we've never been a significant owner. Here we're able to move into the handy-sized market in a big way with 15 ships and complement our existing business with our existing customers and new customers, and also take on some really good people in the MTM organization that will help us move the company forward, attract more cargo, and drive our earnings and cash flow forward.
Makes a lot of sense. And for you, Kostas, your company has quite a significant newbuilding program ahead of you. Seems like a good timed ordering spree. What was sort of the considerations between newbuilding and secondhand transactions when you wanted to grow your fleet?
For my company, as you know, Drydale is growing by investing in a building project here in Japan. We are doing only in Japanese shipyards. Since 2021, we have contracted more than 15 new buildings, which from Handymax until Kamsarmax. This is our size. However, we decided, I will give you fresh news here in Capital Link, that this year, 3 months ago, we decided to move on the Capes. So we have put our first Cape size vessel, which will be ready, scrubber fitted, which will be ready by 2028 here in Japan. So we changed our sail on the dry bulk, so we're entering on the Capesize with our first new building order, which will be ready in 2-3 years. In addition to, we have created new relationship with Japanese financiers. We have very close relationship, and we have new relationship coming from Japan, from Singapore, and we are very busy with BBC project with Japanese owners and JV structures. In addition to, instead, we don't only add ships, but we have selling our older ships. For the last 6 months, we have concluded successfully 4 of our older ships being sold in the market. So we are growing. Also, we don't grow on the seaborne side. As we are operators, we are growing with 3 offices around the world, Singapore, Dubai, and Brazil. In my Singapore office, we have already concluded 20 ships with a long time charter period from Japanese owners. So we have 13 vessels on the water with our ships, and we have 20 ships, TC vessels, from the Japanese owners. So we are controlling 36 ships, mainly Ultramax and Handymax size.
Thank you. Star Wars, it seems like you're getting a Cape size.
More competitor now.
Not a competitor, perhaps. Perhaps a
Pomeroy. From Japan.
The more the merrier. The more the merrier.
Yeah, but the, you know, Synergy has grown the fleet quite significantly over the last years. So you still in growth mode, or is it more harvesting the cash flows from what
Look,
you expect?
Look, I mean, being bullish about the market and being keen to grow is not necessarily the same thing. I mean, we think that the values are sort of inflated, especially after the rally of 2024, whereby we saw values increasing by 15 to 20%, and we see different value proposition in the different age brackets. So Synergy as a company, we were looking to grow in a very disciplined way, targeting vessels on a case-by-case when they meet our return criteria. And by our return criteria, I mean that we are basically targeting towards mid-aged second-hand ships. We see that as the most balanced risk-reward proposition in the sector. And the reason for that is basically, if you look at the various assets on a free cash flow yield basis, on a cash on hand, on an unlevered basis, a second-hand ship of around 10 to 15 years now, you can buy at anything between 30, 32, and 40 million. Then you can charter her out for 1 year at around 22,000, and then the FFA rate for the next 5 years until 2030 is at around 20,000. So this is cash on cash returns of around 15%. But as you move towards younger vessels, then this free cash flow yield reduces down to 10%. And then if you look at new buildings, the free cash flow yield is similar, around 10%, but then you have also considerable residual exposure. So basically, we think that the best value proposition is the second-hand ships and actually mid-age ships. And what we're doing is we're buying the ships, we're investing in making the vessels more efficient, and we are always certain that from a capital allocation perspective, we will have sufficient liquidity to return capital to our shareholders, being a public company, and also to maintain a balance sheet that will lend sustainability to the business throughout the cycle. So bullish on the Capes, a bit less so in on growing aggressively.
So a balanced approach to capital allocation and growth is a sensible move. And then John, I guess this is a two-part question. Being the only one on the panel investing outside of dry bulk as well, you know, how are you thinking about growth for dry bulk and versus containers, LPG? And the second, is it new buildings or secondhand that you think is the most interesting opportunities for dry bulk then?
Yeah. Sorry. Thanks for the question. I think, honestly, we used to have Capesize before COVID, several Capesize, but we sold out already before because we feel that is, of course, is a high volatility market segment on Capesize. On the other hand, indeed, as Stavros said, at the moment, particular moment, because not so many new building order and I'm planning delivery wise. So it's, I suppose, maybe in short term, there will be still very strong firm market on the large bulk segment. Well, in our company's case, I think basically we just look at, as I said, the earnings and asset value. So unfortunately, at the moment on the dry bulk, we feel simply that the asset value and the earnings are not very much connected. So it's rather disconnected at the moment. So as Costas also mentioned, the case like to order Ultramax as almost $40 million or Capesize nowadays is much higher than VLCC at a low market time. I think we will not do it because simply the earnings are not supporting as it's 14, 15K. So honestly, on the other side, we talk about container feeder vessels. We will get more or less the similar TC rates level. Well, the asset value is almost a half of the Ultramax boxers at the moment. That's why it's a simple concept that or philosophy. We feel that we hold our horse at the moment, but of course we still have about 15 dry bulk vessels in our fleet. We are still keep fixing these vessels to our commodity trading companies. And on the other hand, I think in the next few months and years to come, I think I would rather to learn more from Mark that in case there's opportunities coming on M&A front, then certainly we will look at certain companies and or fleet acquisition on the dry bulk vessels segment. I think that's probably make better sense. Of course, different from those public companies, they are easily doing shares, swap, and issuing new shares. We will just do the things when we feel that it really makes sense. I think it's from handy size up to Kamsarmax, we still feel that this is the domain that we will definitely add on certain vessels at the coming time.
Hmm.
Thank you.
And John, you mentioned a bit, you know, your listed peers here, and as we saw on the graph, you know, the price at quite a steep discount to price to NAV. But also, as Stavros alluded to, perhaps the second-hand values are a bit inflated. So how do you, as listed companies, manage or how does that change your perspective on the growth opportunities with, you know, equities being priced below the intrinsic value? Mark, perhaps you can start because you printed at NAV, which, you know, an impressive exercise. Are there a lot of those types of deals to be done?
There aren't a lot of those types of deals. You have to fit a special situation to do a deal like that, and it everything fell in place for us. But you know, the concentration on NAV versus stock price is pretty interesting. It restricts you from issuing shares if your price is below your NAV. But I attended a Capital Link conference last week in New York, and a similar question was asked of the panel. And one of the analysts said, "What does NAV have to do anything to do with stock price? Stock price really should be determined based on the potential earnings and cash flow eligible for distribution to the shareholders at the end of the day. And it has nothing to do with what you paid for your assets. It has everything to do with what you do with those assets to create value." And so I think maybe sometimes we're a little too concentrated on that NAV number and a little less concentrated on what we need to do to get our stock price up.
Hmm. And Stavros, you recently introduced a, let's call it a dividend policy that also, you know, one thing is it probably increases your dividend payments, but it also enhances the visibility of dividends. So, you know, how is the feedback from the investor community on the back of that, and how does that help Synergy to be a better vehicle for as a stock listed company?
Yeah, first of all, I do agree with Mark. I mean, NAV as a metric was much more relevant in the decade before the pandemic when, I mean, the markets were challenging. So investors were naturally looking at the liquidation value of the companies before investing and whether it makes sense. On the other hand, you have an inherent discount when you are a dry bulk company because of the volatility in values and earnings. At the end of the day, we are asset and cash flow based businesses. So basically, if you're investing in a business that the assets were worth 10-15% less 12 months ago and the cash flow was much more much weaker, then basically also yourself, if you were to invest in such a business, you would be looking potentially at a discount to NAV to enter. But as Mark said, price to earnings is a much more relevant metric nowadays for public shipping companies, especially for dry bulk companies, focusing on higher shareholder returns. So indeed, we have a new capital, a new dividend policy whereby we look to allocate 50% of operating cash flows towards paying dividends to the shareholders. We think that this is very important. At the same time, we're trying to balance between having shareholders who usually have short investment horizons and different agendas happy, and also looking after the longevity and the sustainability of the business. So we own assets that are depreciating. We have to also invest on the assets to renew the fleets, to grow the fleets, in order for the companies to be sustainable going forward. And this is unfortunately something that penalizes. I mean, the growth plans, even if they are conservative, even if they are a bit more targeted, they always penalize the share price of the public companies, whereas private owners can have huge order books without really getting penalized for that.
Mm. But again, Stavros, then, you know, on our estimates, I think Synergy is trading at 0.6 times NAV, roundabout there.
Today, yes.
Yeah, today. So, you know, does that in a way paralyze you as a listed company on doing deals? Then if you want to grow through M&A and issuing shares, you know, your counterparty would not want to take shares at a higher level than last close? Or can you also do the type of deals as Mark did, where he printed at NAV significantly above?
We could potentially do that, but that would assume a larger acquisition target, which now we are not looking to do. I mean, we're happy with the size of the company as it is. We're harvesting cash flows. We're targeting, as I said before, more disciplined growth. And at the same time, we're looking to invest in making our vessels more efficient so that we can continue being competitive in the years to come, basis the new environmental regulations. So yes, there is currently a discount. It's around 60. We're trading around 60% of NAV. And by the way, since there is this discount, later on when the U.S. market will be open, go call your brokers, buy the dip. It's a very good opportunity. The ticker is SHIP. SHIP, don't miss on the opportunity. It might not be there tomorrow.
Yeah, let's go run and buy a stock. Back to sort of supply growth. I think it seems secondhand is an interesting way to grow. Perhaps a bit more than new builds, as Star Wars mentioned, a bit low returns on the new builds. So you have a low fleet or low fleet growth, low order book. And then there's the environmental aspect of this, you know, how does dry bulk play its part in becoming a carbon neutral part of the global economy? So Kostas, you know, when you have ordered your new builds, you know, what considerations have you made in terms of, you know, this vessel being operated for 25 years and then in, who knows, you know, 15, 20 years how the regulations look like? What is your, you know, considerations on that when making a new build order?
My consideration of making new building orders, I would like to comply with the new regulation, be much more competitive in the market, and building here in Japan, the Japanese ships are the best performing ships. So I have a very strong intention to remain here in Japan and building dry bulk ships only.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. Mark, your position as, you know, a bit more integrated, does that change the way you have to think about emissions, not solely only being a tonnage provider, but being a bigger part of your client's value chain?
Yes, I think it does. We do have a responsibility, all of us, to contribute here, and we're doing all the smart things that everybody else is doing, the economic things to reduce consumption, plan better on voyages, to put whatever equipment we can put on our ships to monitor better, so we can measure better, so we can reduce. Just a simple example, we just started paying a little bit more attention to how often the ships at sea are using two auxiliary engines, and we just asked some questions each time we saw somebody using what we thought was the chief engineer may be overusing two engines at once. And just the questions reduced our our consumption or the time that we're using two engines at sea by about 8 or 10% over a three-month period. So times 26 ships, it adds up. I was to refer back to the last panel just for a minute. The question was pretty interesting to me as to what's happened in the last year that you can say that people are doing more or less about emissions. And as I listened to the speaker's talk, I became aware that what's happening is that, you know, nothing can happen unless people accept a problem and accept that there's a solution. And I think that's the needle that's moved in the last year, that people are realizing and accepting that there's a problem and accepting that there's a way to move forward and address the issue. So that's the most optimistic thing that I've seen in the last year in this regard.
So you're the neutral optimist. Was that how I labeled the panelists? Yeah. So you go into that category, Mark. John, neutral optimist, or what's your view on how we renew the fleet to a more sustainable profile?
Yeah, I think a majority of the Greek ship owners, have said already many years back that slow steaming is the most helpful element. Actually, some kind of measures that we will reduce the emission and the environment friendly. Honestly, technically speaking, personally, I'm very much puzzled which alternative fuel could really succeed in that. The question is, people talk about some shipyards, of course, talk about dual fuel. And my question is, why not three fuel? Why not three fuel?
Why not five?
Yeah, why not five? So nobody knows who will be eventually the best choice, the wise one, right? I think to that regard, that's why we decided not to make this such kind of very expensive experiment on that, on which kind of fuel alternatives can be eventually succeed out. So that's why also part of the reason that we decided to go smaller size of ships. So that's why, I mean, talk about handy size, bulkers, or relatively smaller size in other segments. So we see that the necessity or pressure to choose dual fuel or different alternatives will be less than just using conventional. So of course we are doing electronic engine ships, and then we are certainly applying for the tier 3 as per the latest CII, all these kind of regulations that we obey. But as to different fuel alternatives, I think at the moment we really stick to very conventional and traditional way.
Mm.
Yeah. Thank you.
Stavros, being sort of a Cape size deep sea, all deep sea, but especially for Cape size longer voyages, you know, what do you see as the most likely outcome? Is it dual fuel, or will we have some ammonia vessels? There are some ammonia vessels coming at some point in the dry bulk sector, but what is your view on this?
Well, I don't have a clue. Oh. I don't have a view about it. I mean, last time, I can only echo what John said. Last time I checked, Cape sizes and handies and supras and ultras are not ambulances. We are not in the life-saving business. We do not carry medical equipment. So we should slow the ships down. Nothing can happen if iron ore, coal, and bauxite gets delivered a couple of days later. I mean, we used to speed up the ships and then go up to 13 and 14 knots and then arriving at the destination port and wait for a month to get the cargo. Why should that be the case? I mean, there's absolutely no reason. We should all work together in slowing down the ships. And other than that, what we're doing in Synergy is that we are basically investing in proven technologies like energy-saving devices, silicone paints. We have seen that this makes the vessels more efficient, but let's say 10% or even 14% during sea passage days. This is sufficient to make an impact, a direct impact on the environment today in this transitory phase. And then we can all start ordering together with our charterers when the technology of tomorrow is known, when we have certainty about the fuel of tomorrow. For the time being, let's work with the existing ships.
Hmm. So I guess the takeaway is that invest in the known technologies that we have today that can help. And then the jury is still out there on the future.
Exactly.
Now I would like to thank all the panelists for a great panel. Some really interesting discussions. I think you know, the takeaway is that fleet order book is low, and given your comments, it doesn't seem like new builds are gonna. You're not gonna run to the yards to order new builds. So
not today.
So that means that the market will be fairly balanced also for the longer term, which is a good backdrop. So so with that, thank you to the panelists. Thank you to Capital Link for having this panel.
Thank you all.